That was a foreigner. Not a tanner. All right, let's do this so we can finish up that. So, where we left off, we were looking at the Makaros. There are really very few Makaros. We saw the Gemara in Yuma. We see that the Yuma, the upshot in Yuma, is you can learn it to be telling me the definition of death, and that there's a competition between cardiac death versus brain versus breathing. And it seems to conclude, if you look at this in that Pashut way, then the conclusion of this Gemara is that breathing is the definition of Pidin of death. So if a person's irreversibly not going to breathe, they're dead. Of course, that's not an adequate definition because there are many diseases that cause that to happen. So that's why we had Rashi. You could say Rashi threw in that we don't start talking about breathing being a definition of death until you see the person's not moving at all and there's no organs in the body moving. So Rabbi Tendler will tell you he's not talking about the heart. The heart can keep going. He means that there's no centralized moving, as we'll see he develops more in the Makaros that we're going to look at today. And Rabbi Bleich said, no, Rashi's very critical there, and Rashi's talking about the heart. You don't start talking about breathing being a definition of death unless the heart's already stopped. And we see that everyone's going to be dealing with these Makaros, either that's the way they saw them, or they're fitting it into their Shita. It's always hard to know, because something creates a Shita in a person. Usually, Posik, it's that's approaching an issue, a halachic issue, appropriately. What they do is they, and this is the reason to be a posek, you really need to know kol haTorah kula, because you want to approach it from the full view of Shas, full view of Rishonim Poskim, and get a thrust, what your most accurate combination of shittos and everything is, brings you to a psak. So for the different people, we're coming out in these different ways. Aside from the Gemara and Yuma, we started looking on page 10, at the Hutaz Rishayim, there is a definition of death that's absolute. It's matame kashid when there's hotzas and nefesh. What is the example of absolute hotzas and nefesh? That is Hutaz Rishayim. When there is decapitation, and Pashut Pshat is, this is real physical mamish decapitation we're talking here, any other movements are irrelevant. We don't care if there's like spasms in the body. By definition of the Mishnah, that person's dead. So now, all you need to do, if you're looking for a handy-dandy definition of death to use in contemporary society, is find something that meets these criteria. So, no one in the hospital is going around chopping anyone's heads off, Baruch Hashem, right?
Yes.
No matter what the state of the person is. Yes. But Rabbi Tanna says, you gotta be ma'ayin and look into what is really going on here. Is it mamish hutaz rasheim that they're looking for, that you physically chop off the head? No, he uses the Rambam, and you gotta respect this. The Rambam's saying something very significant here. He's saying that when the Mishnah had said, in that line it says, "Hutzu rasheihem afal pi shemefarchasim tmeyin," that when the head is cut off, even though there's movements, it's still matame, meaning that the person is dead. What's that saying? So Rambam's giving a pshat in that line, and he's saying, well, because it's telling me that in order for movements to count as life movements, they have to be centrally organized, meaning they have to have an origin from the central nervous system. But if these are just haphazard spasms independent of any central control, right, there's not a living organism there. There's just independent little muscles that can twitch. A muscle can twitch totally out of the body. The heart can beat totally out of the body. And it's a very compelling approach that Rav Tendler is formulating. What's the alternative? What is Rabbi Bleich, who's very much against Rabbi Tanna's definition, let's say, what does he do with this Rambam? What's the other way of looking at it? What's the Rambam doing? Is the Rambam defining life and death means loss of central control? What's he giving you?
He's giving the definition of movement.
Right, in other words, he's giving you pshat in that line in the Mishnah. That's all he's doing. He's telling you that when that line said that the spasms don't count, he's explaining why. But that doesn't mean that this is the absolute definition, and once a person could still be breathing or heart's beating, but they don't have central control over all their movements, they're dead. Because otherwise, what's the absurd conclusion you can do with that? Lo aleinu, but a person is a quadriplegic or something like that, you know, what are you going to say? They have no voluntary movements anymore. They've lost central control. They've lost it. Are they dead? No. They're not dead. So, again, able to be taken in both directions. Then we had the Gemara in Chulin, which I won't go into in much detail unless you really wanted me to. But that Gemara gives other analysis of the Hutaz Roshehem Sugya. And in it, we again have Rabbi Bleich contending. They seem to be adding to the definition over there. In the Gemara Chulin, I'll give you this much. It adds that not only do you have, it seems to say, not only is the definition of death the breaking of the spine, the severing of the spine, but added to it is Rov Basar Ima, right? Which means that, and the Gemara discusses this, does it mean like just the support structure of the neck, or does it mean the trachea and the esophagus also? One simon, two simon, there's a whole discussion in the Gemara. So Rabbi Bleich says, if it was as simple as Rabbi Tender says, why do we need all that other stuff? This is a good ha'era by Rabbi Bleich, right? If it's all about loss of communication of the brain with the rest of the body, why do I need the Gemara throwing in all those other things as necessary, or even entertaining it as necessary for this person to be considered Hutaz Rosho and dead? So, back and forth, back and forth. If you turn the page, I'm going to show you the last bit of discussion in, let's say, classic sources of the definition of death is the Chasam Sofer and then the Chacham Tzvi. This Chasam Sofer is a really important Chasam Sofer.
If, obviously, if people are dead, they're no longer operating on any level, meaning physically, they might have something like that. Why is it that they still have this, you know, this argument contingent on the fact of, you know, the head has to be severed off, it doesn't, you know, internal severing, whatever it is. Like, why did that argument hold? At the end of the day, this person will not operate ever again in his entire cardiac blood flow, whatever. Like, there's nothing there anymore.
Well, if his heart's not beating, and he's
no, meaning his heart is beating, but
you have to make his heart beating. There's the only way to differentiate the shitos. Meaning, like, so you have an individual, you're telling me whose heart is beating,
right.
Blood is circulating. They're not able to breathe on their own. They're not able to have any movements on their own. They're not able to respond to any stimuli. They're brain dead, right? They're by classic definition of brain death. They're brain dead. So your question is, what? Person should be dead. I'll be dead.
The person is—he's not.
He's never going to be what?
He's not going to be doing anything ever.
Serving again. Society again? In other words, like
even for himself, he's not going to be doing anything.
Fine, but you're—he's never going to even do anything for himself. He's not going to do.
I mean,
what kind of definition? You got to be careful. You got to understand what you're saying. In other words, there's two ways of answering. Two very harsh ways of answering your question. Of course, not personally harsh, but harsh to that shita. Number one, we're looking. Here's the soft. Soft is we're looking for a halachic definition of death. Which means a metaphysical event, not a physiological event, not a scientific event, not a medical event, but the moment that the neshama, wherever it is, leaves the body. There's no way that any medical or empirical evidence will tell me when that happens. It's a metaphysical event. That's like God knows, right? Or we could know if God told us through the Masorah, right, through Psukim, whatever it is. Then, yeah, maybe. Otherwise, no matter what you say, no matter what the reality is, the sad reality is, it doesn't really matter. Because the greatest doctor in the world who knows absolutely that this person 1,000% will never recover in any way is not defining death. They will be the first ones to admit that. Even the Harvard criteria, I told you, the head of it, he made that statement. He said, we can't define death. It's not a scientific... He admits it. I don't know how religious he is, but he's admitting that when the soul leaves the body, who on earth knows? We can't experiment on that. That's one way of criticizing what you're saying. The other one is a little harsher. In other words, like... Look what you're saying. You know, you're defining it as this person is never able to physically, whatever, right? Now, let's say you want to be like, I'll give you an absurd example, but it's a true example. You heard of Watson and Crick? Famous DNA? So Francis Crick made the following statement. He's the Crick of Watson. He said, I think we should define life beginning at 3 days and death occurring at the age of 70. Why? And on what basis? What is that definition? So he says, well, if we can define life begin in 3 days, that means that we can get rid of all the defective newborns and not be murdering anyone, right? Forget about abortion. You wait till they're 3 days old, and anyone in between, you know, until then, just like throw them out the window or something, or flush them down the toilet. Do something with them because they're not alive. Why? Because I just arbitrarily defined their usefulness to society. Right? Obviously, I'm giving you a real absurd, extreme example.
Was he serious?
He was serious.
Was that the one who said
You know where he wanted to put it into real... He meant practically then, and he meant practically at the end of life, too. You know, he's living in England. He doesn't want... You know, socialized medicine is like not enough dialysis going around, you know, machines, not enough various modalities available for all the sick people. Or everyone over 70, you had your fun. You know, you're not going to contribute to society anymore. You're dead. What does that mean? We're not going to spend a dime on you. We're not going to care about you. We'll let you die. Whatever happens to you, you know, that's it. That's how absurd. When you start to like use any other definition of life and death other than an absolute one that is coming from whatever your, you know, background is. If you're a secular person, that's what you run into. You know, they get into this problem because I'll tell you what's happening right now. The Harvard Criteria decided that they're going to be, they're secular, right? Totally secular committee. They know religion is having a place in that committee. So what are they going to do? They're going to define, they're going to start, they're the beginning of it. This is their earliest definition. So they're going to say, we're going to go to the extreme and we're going to say death means cerebral cortex and brainstem. Recently, people have been suggesting, and over the years people have been suggesting, something along the lines, right, not what you said, but the next step. They're saying, you know, wait a second. You know, why do we need brainstem and cerebral cortex? If a person doesn't have a cerebral cortex, what is he? He's not thinking, he's not active, he's not doing anything. Brainstem is not necessary. Brainstem could be alive and well. A person could breathe, have circulating. They could be terishavo, right? They can be in a persistent vegetative state. That's what it's called, PVS. They're dead. They want to refine the definition. That would not shock me that that would happen, right? And it does happen, even though it's not officially on the books. But I would tell you right now, the doctors do this all the time. They define in their hearts and minds that these people are dead, and just we'll take them off respirators and do things like that, saying we're not killing anyone because they're already dead. This is the big problem a lot of religious Jews have, because there's no definition, Rabbi Tendler, nobody who says a persistent vegetative state is dead. Nobody says that. There are rules at the end of life for kulas in terms of you don't have to do heroic interventions, and the whole question of nutrition and hydration, and maybe we'll talk about that when, I mean, I think we're going to need a break from death. I want to talk about a more cheerful topic as the next topic, but we're going to come back at some point. We'll have to do the end of life because I'm telling you it's a very important topic, unfortunately. And you'll see. We'll see what kind of leeway we have, but here where I'm going with this. Okay. Now, so let me just quickly tell you what the Chasam Sofer. This Chasam Sofer is very important for many reasons. One, I think I've mentioned to you already, when it comes to conflicts between science and Torah, there's two approaches. There's the Chazon Ish approach and the other approach. Basically, the Chazon Ish says that, you know, it doesn't really matter if a scientific determination by Chazal, whether it was based on Mesorah, Halacha L'Moshim Sinai, the Drush of a Pasuk, or their own empirical observations, once it's part of Torah, it's absolute. And we don't care if later it changed, or somebody had a better insight and had greater tools of experimentation and found that it was wrong, it doesn't really matter. Because once it was kavua as part of the halachic reality, it's that way la'olam. So the Chasam Sofer really seems to take that shita here, because he talks about, this was the Chasam Sofer responding to whom? Remember I hope I told you about, the Duke of Mecklenburg and what he wanted to do, no one should be buried for 3 days and all that stuff. And along comes Moses Mendelssohn, and Moses Mendelssohn says, yeah, this is a great idea, and he tells you about the guy in the cave, and he was dead, and then he had lived for another 25 years when they found that he was really alive, and he had like many children, and all that great stuff. So comes along Chasam Sofer, and he's writing, I think it was actually, if I'm not mistaken, he's responding to Rabbi Yaakov Emden, maybe. I forgot exactly who the Shiloh was coming from, but he mentions Moses Mendelssohn and his tshuva, and says how stupid it was. And then he gives you how we're going to decide when to bury somebody. Right, because it was real tachlis. We're not listening to the Duke of Mecklenburg. You can't put this off for 3 days. That's against so many doraisas, right? It's not kvod ha'meis, it's in achiyuf kfura, it's a bizayon. Absolutely awesome. So what's going to be it? He says, what? Now I'm going to read the lines, let's see what you guys think. Is he holding like Rabbi Tendler, or is he holding like Rabbi Bleich? They're going to be our major players, right, for the moment. We're going to throw in someone else in a minute. So the Chasam Sofer says, first in paragraph 1, which is very is the important paragraph, he says that the source of this definition is either the Mesoras Ba'alentidim HaRishonim, that the experts in natural sciences, the experts in medicine of the times of Chazal, they're either the source, them. Oh, it's the Mesorah Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai, or Samchu on the Drasha of a Pasuk. Whatever it is, this is the definition, and he says the following: Kishe pasak nishmato shuv ein mechalin Shabbos. We see from the Gemara in Yuma, right? When someone stops breathing, it can't be Mechal Shabbos. Val Korchach, Klalhu, Lekol HaMason. And this is the absolute, he's emphasizing it because he's shouting at Moses Mendelssohn as he's saying this. The rule is, anyone who's dead, Shizeu Shior, HaMekubal B'yadeinu Ma'az Haita Idas Hashem Legoy Kadosh, Vekol HaRucho Shebaolam Imim Le'u Mitneyam Ruach Lo Yazizunu Mimakom Tarasenu HaKadosha. So, what does that sound like? What's he accepting? What's the absolute, in-your-face definition of death? Hafsakat nishmatet. And right away, the proponents of brain death and breathing cessation death, what do they quote when they quote the Chasam Sofer? That. Okay? Now, what do the other guys quote? They quote the next paragraph. Look over to your left. The Chasam Sofer then reiterates what he was saying, right? This is a reiteration. He says, Abal kol she'achar she'mutal ke'even domen. Who's he quoting? Mutal ke'even domen. He's like a rock, not moving. Rashi. The ein bo shum defika, and he has nothing beating, including his heart, presumably. The im achar kach, right? Batal neshima, and then he stops breathing. Ein lano ela divrei saraseinu akdosha she'humes. So now he's going like the other tzad. Right? Now, they quote this. So, is the Chasam Sofer going to help us? No. If he would have only stopped where he was, that would have been that would have been an authoritative halachic determination. But, there's a total internal contradiction here. We don't know what he means. Does he mean, you know, it's the Seder that's important. Let's say the guy stopped breathing first. That might have been enough, but we'll never know. We'll never know. The Chacham Tzvi is just, I wanted you to see this, it's another interesting. The Chacham Tzvi is mefurish that you need the heart to stop beating. He was asked a very famous shaila, if you learn Yeridei and you don't get smicha, it's a very famous shaila about the chicken that had no heart. Is it a trefa or not? Right? The shaila came to the Chacham Tzvi, we shechted the chicken and we didn't find the heart. Right? So there was a kashrus question. Right? Is it a trefa? Is what? The Gemara doesn't even entertain it. Right, so that's what Chacham Tzvi says. He says, there's something wrong, there must have been a cat nearby or something that took the heart. Well, there's no such thing. And in that, he says the opening line, Savor ha'isi, shelo yistapik adem asher b'shem chacham, yikavne b'chayi kol b'alchayi gashmi, shem tulim b'liba. Everybody knows that the material life requires a heart. So people want to say, you see, he's saying that the absolute definition of life is with a heart. But of course, all of this is not going to do anything for anybody because there's so many ways of learning this from side to side. I could say that, yeah, definitely need a heart to live, but that doesn't mean that that's the definition of life, right? You need a heart to live because without a heart, you'll be dead. But you could be dead even with a heart. It doesn't contradict that statement because you could, if death is caused by a cessation of breathing, so, if I don't have my heart, I'm going to stop breathing, so I'll be dead. But we could create a scenario nowadays where a person who cannot breathe will still have his heart beating. So, you know, we're kind of like left with a lot of ambiguous mekoros, and what's left now is for the gedolim to fight it out. So, the gedolim are going to come in step two. I purposely separate the next pages 12 through like 19. Two sections. Section one is I wanted you to see the what I call the prelims to the real fight, right? Prelims are Rav Bleich, Rav Tendler, and Dr. Steinberg. Now, they all take sides, and they're not, let's say, in the group of absolutely recognized poskim that would be paskim the shayla at the highest level for Klal Yisrael. But they are presenting the arguments. I mean, some people will use Rav Tendler as their poskim, and I've seen plenty. And there are people that will go to Rabbi Bleich for a psak. But in, let's say, the greater world, outside of YU especially, and in the greater world, so they're giving the arguments, right? Them and Dr. Steinberg. So it's worth reading, if you're interested in this topic, for real, first Rabbi Tendler's article. Rabbi Tendler's article is on page 12. And I'm going to summarize the important points for you. He, of course, is emphasizing, if you look on page 12, halachic sources. So which source would he, if he's going to end up telling me that the real definition of death is a physiological decapitation, where there's loss of central control of the body, right? So he's going to go with Olos Hutaz Rosha, right? So that's what he starts off with, right over there. Oh, I didn't give you. I didn't photocopy that. Oh my god! Oh my god! All right, so we'll do it without the handouts, but I'll. Somebody here does. The guy I just gave you has the whole thing.
Oh.
You have everything.
Now I can teach.
Right. So I'm going to do this off the sheets, and I'll tell you basically. We have mentioned. No, I don't need this. Who wants it? I have others, and we can make more if you want the rest. This article is very important. You should have. This is the good stuff, actually. That if you wanted to do any reading up on your own. All right. Let me summarize everybody's shita. You have really when at the end of the day, three shitas on this issue that are fighting it out, based on the makaros that we just saw: Yuma, Olos, Chacham Tzvi, Chasam Sofer, and Chula. And it's Rabbi Tenla, Rabbi Bleich, and now Dr. Steinberg. Dr. Steinberg emphasizes Yuma, Rabbi Tenler emphasizes Olos and Chulin, and Rabbi Bleich says they don't know what they're talking about, they're all wrong, it has nothing to do with them. So, what most of the arguments we've mentioned already, right? Most of the arguments and how they learn those sugyas we've mentioned. What becomes a little hazy is for a decade, up till now, right? Now I'm about to tell you there's a new fight going on right now as we speak. But let's say from the 80s to last year, the essential argument was this follows. According to Rabbi Bleich, we'll do Rabbi Bleich last. According to Rabbi Tendler, what he always said was that all I needed, and all Rav Moshe Feinstein needed to declare somebody dead was the Harvard criteria plus one further thing, which is that imaging to show that there's no circulation of blood to the brain, which is an absolute indication that the brain no longer communicates with the body. So, how do you attack that sheet? So you attack it on the makaros that we've seen. That's not really what they say, right? And you attack it based on the ability that we have to actually even accepting it, playing devil's advocate, and say, you know what, Rabbi Tendler, you're right. The definition, let's say, is this central coordination of bodily functions and movement. And if you could show conclusively that there's a disconnect physiologically between the brain and all the other things it does, you've shown brain death. And that's death, right? So Rabbi Bleich's first attack is that's not doable. That all the tests that he says are not really showing that. And that when you do, let's say, this imaging study, it misses. If he starts, one thing about Rabbi Bleich, don't mess with Rabbi Bleich, because he's a very well-trained lawyer, and he knows you want to make an argument, you back it up with facts. So he has at his fingertips, or at his keyboard, all the medical literature on this topic. He puts it forward as well as any doctor could, and he says, like, article after article is demonstrating that all these tests don't really demonstrate what Rabbi Tendler is claiming that they do. That's one. Then, the other problem is that Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Elyashiv rejected Rabbi Tendler's approach out of hand because what I told you once, who remembers? What's the real problem with Rabbi Tendler's approach doing this imaging study? Yes, the Gosei's problem. There's no way we can ever do it because the person's always a Gosei almost by definition if we're contemplating brain death. And in which case, even if it were true, even if Rabbi Bleich was wrong and you were right that you really could do this, you can't do it. So, impossible. So comes along Dr. Steinberg from Eretz Yisrael and he says, well, forget it. We don't need that imaging test. It has nothing to do with anything. Just look at Yuma. Yuma gives me an absolute definition. The definition of life is breathing. And as soon as you can show irreversible breathing by that apnea test, everyone remember how the apnea test worked? Right? Apnea tests are very accurate. Apnea test means that I let the person's carbon dioxide rise, and any person who's capable at all of breathing will absolutely breathe in response to the carbon dioxide rising. So you turn on, you give them hyperoxygen so you don't kill them, right? This gets around the Gosei's problem. Meaning, like, the tube is down, they're on a ventilator, and they're getting oxygen, and they're also, it's breathing for them. So it's oxygen in, carbon dioxide out. So what you do is you leave the tube in, you don't touch them, but all the way over here, right, the patient's over there, the machine's over here, you turn it off. So now, and you put in 100% oxygen, you super oxygenate them so that you're not causing any suffocation, which is very doable. And the only thing that's not happening is the carbon dioxide is not being removed. So what you do then is you let the carbon dioxide rise and rise and rise. And then when you see it gets to a certain level, whatever the cutoff is, 50, normal is 40, so 50, 60, right? And there's no spontaneous movements of breathing, that's called failed apnea test. It's over, right? So Dr. Steinberg said that's all you need to do. That's all you need to do. That's an irreversible demonstration of breathing is not capable of being done. You might have to repeat it to show irreversibility 12 hours later. You also have to have, backing this up, the rest of the neurological demonstration that there's no functioning. And for Dr. Steinberg, the Ikar is not Gutas Rosho or any of that stuff. He's not interested in that. He says the whole Gutas Rosho, that's only dead because now you can't breathe. Right? Whereas Rabbi Tendler formally said, Yuma is only true because it indicates that the brain is dead. Right? They're like opposite discussions.
Rabbi Yashin and Shulman sound okay with the apnea test?
Ah, so...
Because it's still you doing stuff.
Right, so they didn't even comment on it because they think that you cannot learn Yuma in such a pashut way. In other words, they don't accept this Rabbanut business at all. The Rabbanut did accept Dr. Steinberg's, and currently in Eretz Yisrael, that is the definition of death. So lo aleinu, although every hospital has put into the din, thanks to the Knesset and thanks to the religious parties in the Knesset, that if you object to the Rabbanut's definition, you don't have to hold by it. Right. And of course, all the non-Rabbanut people don't hold by it. Right? They have their own set of criteria. That's the way it is in all the hospitals.
But like secular Israelis, like they don't.
They'll definitely use the civic. They don't give it the Rabbanut either. They'll just.
So what's the protocol of the hospital?
They'll use that like everyone else. Harvard criteria, whatever that is. That's the definition of death. And out it goes. So based on this, right, according to Rabbi Tendler and Dr. Steinberg, there is the possibility of donating hearts. According to everyone else, there's not. I just want you to hear Rav Schechter's approach. I forgot to tell you that. Rav Schechter is an original, independent approach to this whole thing. He says, Ki adam hua nefesh. He thinks that clearly there are many, many makoros that substantiate the idea that circulation is the definition of life. However, he says there's a Gemara in Erechin that says there are certain organs she'han neshama taluya bo. Right? There are three organs. Anyone know what they are? I made a mention.
Heart.
Heart.
Liver.
Brain. Heart, brain. And who said liver? Liver, right. I never would have said liver in a million years, but it's the liver. The heart, the brain, and liver are called the Evarim she'han neshama taluya bo. So comes on Rav Schechter and he says, he proves from another sugya that when blood is not flowing to a particular organ, it's considered dead. Right? The shaila is, though, when the Gemara says, Hanashama Taliyaba, does it mean all three or any one of the three? That's the suffix for a Shechter. A Shechter is ready to declare dead, right? As a possibility, it's an incredible thing, and he admits, yes, this would be odd. The person will be talking to you, but I'll be dead. They're dead, right? He says, he's saying there's no definitive evidence that it's true. It's a suffix. Could be that he's a gosis. He's on the way out. And by the way, anyone whose liver is really like that doesn't have much time. It's not a great state to be in. They really won't be talking to you. I've seen it.
What did the liver come from?
What if the idea that a liver was one of these main? We haven't talked about it before this.
Exactly, because it's a sugya that no one brought in. It's a sugya that has to do with
Erchen.
Shouldn't that be a discussion at least in all the other?
No, because they don't think it's relevant, that particular sugya. I'll tell you the sugya. It's
The heart and the liver is somewhere immediate than the liver.
Right, now it makes sense to us. The question is,
even if you were considered, it's not immediate death.
Huh?
Loss of function of the liver is not immediate death like part of the brain.
Right, by our definition. But here's what you got to get used to. There's Alpi Din and there's Alpi Metzias. Did you ever hear of the famous Telzer Chakira? You know what a Telzer Chakira is? So everyone knows Yeshiva Telz. So Soloveitchik, when he thought somebody was making a chakira that was a little, let's say, telzerish, he would say, "Oh, you're doing a telzer chakira," which means like this: there's you can look at the sugyas al pi metzias and al pi din, And you got to realize that they don't have to have anything to do with each other. In other words, if the Torah defines death as the loss of the liver, that's it. Al pidin, that person is dead. Right? Now, of course, his maskana was like this. His maskana is there's a suffix. So he says that, I don't know. I don't know if what the Gemara meant was all three together or any alone. But since it's a suffix, we have to be machmir like both shittas, which is an amazing thing. What does it mean to be machmir like both shittas? That means if someone's got a gangrenous liver, Cohen should leave because he'll be tamid. It has the other nafkaminas too, about yibum and all sorts of yerushim nafkaminas to this whole thing. So we have to go the chumra both ways. Also, the person's not dead until they have all three out. So that means he needs cardiac death from Shechta to declare anyone dead. So he will be machmir about donating organs also. But for a different reason than everybody else. Different reason than everybody else. Because Rabbi Blach will say, no, there's no suffix that the person's not dead until the heart stops. And if the heart stops, you know, he's badai dead. As Rav Shechter is going to say, not until all three are you badai dead. And Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, actually, a little bit on the similar to Rav Shechter, but he definitively says you need all. You need heart, breathing, and brain. You need all three to be out to declare someone dead. He's the most machmir in all the shittas. At the end of the day, you have all the poskim, many of the other poskim will fall into Rav Shechter's approach, they'll call it suffik, right? The only ones that are saying that brain death is brain death, and either by breathing or Hutaz Rosho, is really Rav Tendler and the Rabbanut right now. The RCA used to be with Rav Tendler, and that's the major controversy going on right now. RCA retracted, and they're fighting, and back and forth, and there's all sorts of... I don't see how it's going to ever get anywhere because all the information is, there's no new information, right? It's all out there. There's a lot of ambiguity. It's sort of like at the end of the day, I can't see it being any better than a suffix,
so
at best.
Who you hold by at the end of the day?
Well, me personally?
Well, I'm saying at the end of the day, it's never.
What do you guys do? You got to go with your rav, the person that you paskin with consistently, meaning this is not for like your local shul rav, but in other words, I would tell you that. I think a very viable approach for somebody who doesn't have, let's say, a posik mufak necessarily in the gedolim world, rov gedolim, say no. Rov.
Say no what?
No to organ donation because there's no definitive death by any of the contemporary criteria.
So about accepting, they still say yes.
Ah, so that's what I wanted to end with. I wanted to at least get that in. That's the really, that's the delicate area. Let's think this through. If we had to figure this out, right? Let's say we go like Rove Poskin, that you cannot kill somebody, and taking out their heart, even though they're brain dead, is killing. Right? That's our starting point. We don't hold like Rabbi Tendler. We don't hold like Dr. Steinberg or the Rabbanut. We hold like everyone else. Right? Everyone else. Even if you can hold like Rav Shechter Safek, you still can't Safek kill somebody. Right? What about now? Going on the list. Let's say me, I've told you, I've not only put patients on the list, I've talked them into it and cajoled them into it to be on the list. Am I doing it out there? So, with the exception of, not surprisingly, Rabbi Tendler, and maybe some of the other people in the Rabbanut, everyone else says mutter. Mutter. Totally mutter. Without a doubt. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, who was the most machmir on defining death, says mutter pshita. Right? Rav Shlomo Zalman, Rav Eliashiv, mutter, but we'll see, there's a little caveat. Here's going to be a really interesting discussion. Rav Shlomo Zalman says mutter in Chutzaretz, Aser in Eretz Yisrael. So we have to figure that one out. Right? Why would Rav Shlomo Zalman say, you can't do it here, you can't accept the heart here, you can't put yourself on the list here, but you can
in
the United States?
Where it came from?
What do you mean?
It's exactly.
Why should that make a difference? You think you're allowed to kill a guy? You're not like
so
that.
It should be about
you're not allowed to kill a non-Jew. Let's get that straight. So it's not going to be that simple.
If you have to choose between the life of
Let's life. Analyze the situation, right? Here's what I did. When I got to this point in the discussion, the very first time, I didn't want to look at any literature yet. I said to myself, and this is what I always recommend you do with every sugya you do and every Gemara you do, right? If you're able to understand the Gemara without looking at any Rishonim, including Rashi, formulate for yourself. You're going to have your best learning of the sugya when you've done that, especially if you're competent and you're used to doing it alone. Right? So I took the sugya like this and I said, all right, what's the issues at stake? I hold that when the surgeon takes the heart out of that guy, he's killing him. That's an act of murder. I, on the other hand, or my patient needs a heart. What's involved now when I go on the list? Right? So before I get into the metzias of the list, which is really important at the end of the day, and I'll tell you how it works, let me just think through, what's my avera here exactly? All right, so first question is it okay to be a mesayeya? I'm not the actual murderer, the surgeon's the murderer, but I'm putting it up, I'm paying him to do it. Is that okay? No, it's not okay. Mesayeya le'ritzicha is pretty bad, right? Okay, good. There's also a problem of lifnei iver. What is lifnei iver? What's the status of lifnei iver? What kind of issur is that? So there's a machlok, the famous machlok is Balamor and the Ramban, right? Prati klal. Is lifnei iver a new independent issur? It's a lav, in which case pikuach nefesh would override it, right? If that's all it is. Or is it more than that? Lifnei iver means it takes on the qualities of the avera that's happening. And then it's yavo yavo.
But is it like the gamri takes it over, or is it just like it's...
Yeah, no, if it does, it does. In other words, to the point of Yagav HaYamar. So, okay, so that's a machlokes rishonim. I don't want to get involved in that possible act of ritzicha. But, okay, he is a gosis. He's got very little time left. He's brain dead already. He's not coming back. I can live another 25, 30 years. Does that fact play a role in this cheshbon?
Didn't you say, when back when we were talking about abortion?
Yeah, good.
That the baby's not considered the best of life because it's dependent on something else.
Right, good.
So maybe someone who's on.
Right, because what do we usually say when it comes to killing somebody to save yourself? What's the din?
No.
Yahari Vel Yavo, right? And why do we say Yahari Vel Yavo? What is the Gemara in Sanhedrin?
Oh, yeah.
Water in the desert?
Gemara in Sanhedrin.
No, his blood is
you guys, never learned Sanhedrin? Come on. Not water in the desert. That's something else. You tell me the difference between water in the desert in a second. In this case, I'm talking about the straightforward case. Why is it, if you ask me, there are three cardinal sins that are Yavo Yavo, and you ask me what they are, I would tell you about the Zarek, Gileros, and Shemaz Dami. And then you would ask me, where does that come from? So I'll say, well, two of them are Gzeres Kasuv, and one is Svar. Ours is Svar. Right? Remember this, Gemara?
Yeah.
Right?
It's
in Sanhedrin. It's in Sanhedrin, and it's in several other places in Yuma. But it's in Sanhedrin. It's Gemara. Where?
Second pair. I think.
That's interesting. Over. Anyway, yeah, what's the Svar? Yes, Miyama de Damech Somech Tfeh. Who says his blood is any less red than mine? Right? So, anyway. So, wait a second. So, the fetus, I told you, one could argue, I guess, one of the approaches of the fetus
is that its
blood is flowing less red than mine. It's flowing less than mine, right? So, therefore, I get precedence over the fetus. But that's not true. When did we say that was not true anymore? As soon as the head crowns and he's a born baby, we're equal, right? And that goes all the way to the end. No matter how sick, no matter how much time you have left. Then, once you're alive, every moment is of infinite value. It's the same value. So in this cheshbon over here, there was one person, the Tiferes Yisrael. Everyone knows what Tiferes Yisrael is? Perish on Mishnah. He actually entertained the possibility that we could say by a trefo, by a gosis, we can make this cheshbon. But that's not the accepted opinion. The accepted opinion is everyone's blood is equal, so that's not going to be allowing me to do this. In other words, I can't, even though there are people that want to make that argument, no one really accepts it. Halacha. Now, because he's going to die, and I'm going to live. This is the doctor's thinking, but it's not the halacha's thinking.
The other case is that if someone throws you at someone else,
oh dear,
and basically you kill him, you don't have to stop yourself and kill yourself instead of killing him.
Right, that's
so
different.
So by putting yourself on the list, this person will die. Why do you have to stop yourself from being on the list passively to keep him alive?
Right. Okay, I have to skip a couple of steps to this logic and this thought process. Maybe I could do it when I come back. If you want me to. I want to jump right to your saying, because this is going to be the Nakuda that really brings it home. There's a lot of misperception as to how the list works that's out there. Rabbi Tendler will claim that all these poskim that are allowing receiving are misrepresenting the way the list works. And he's saying that always, that when a person puts themselves on the list, ultimately they are the facilitator of the heart coming out. Right, because what the poskim just say in a general sense is, it's okay because when I put myself on the list, that heart's coming out anyway. I'm not what's causing the surgeon to take that heart out. That heart is coming out. They declared it dead, and they were taking out their heart to transplant it. Whether it's me or someone else, what's the difference? It's happening. Therefore, I am not really a Messiah, right? That's what was always written and said. Comes on Rav Tendler and says, yeah, but that's because they're ignoring the facts. And the facts are, the way the list works is, let's say, the way he presented it is the moment he puts himself on the list, it is true that it can go to anyone and the heart is going to come out, but it's going to go to you when you put yourself on there and get selected. If you weren't there, it would be, let's say, delayed. And the life would continue. It's because you're there, that's why it's coming out. So Rabbi Tendler says that's an act of misayeya for murder. So which one's right? Neither. I'll tell you exactly how it works. And I'm sorry you don't have the whole handout, but I gave, at the end of the handout, I want you to see this. Well, you can't see anything from here. But remind me that I should give somebody the photocopy, the whole handout, because there's a lot of things that you might want for future reference, especially if you're going into medicine and you're into these topics. There's a lot of good material in the full handout. It's 33 pages. I only gave you guys 12. All right. Anyway, the way it works is like this. If somebody goes on a list, I'll try to walk around with...
Which page is
that? It's the second to last page.
I'm going to copy after this.
Right. So, you see that? That's the last page. There's the second. See that? That is an actual copy. The head of the transplant division where I work was kind enough to allow me to have that, even though that's not really... Legally, you're not supposed to know. We X'd out the names. Right? Legally, this is really privileged information that's only for transplant people. And what you see, right, is over here is the different locations. That's what these different places are.
Zones.
The zones, proximity to the donor, right? The way it really works is the first thing that happens is lo aleinu, if someone gets in a car accident or something, or a head trauma, and they're brain dead, right? And then there's a request to donate the organs. They call up this UNOS, that's the organization, and UNOS comes running and they get all the information, right? No one yet knows about it other than the family, the donating doctors, and this organization, UNOS. And they get all these characteristics of the person that's being donated. Age, size, obvious things, right? Are we doing Shabbos in there?
I don't know, really.
Alright, I'm finishing up in here and then I'm going to do the Shabbos in there. I think he'll be done. I think last... Actually, would you mind finding out? Because we'll either do it in here or there. You can leave the door open because I want everyone to see that they shouldn't think I'm not doing it. Alright, so anyway, so you get all that information, age, body size, gender, history, including odd things like tattoos. Why would they ask that? Why are tattoos important? Right, so hepatitis C and that, lifestyle, what kind of person is this? Right? You want to know everything to kind of give you everything you wanted to know if you're a prospective recipient and choose. Yeah, exactly. But more than, hopefully more than, although nowadays who knows, but just infinite amount of information. And then what happens is it gets sent out. Once the person's listed with all that information, right, and you can see it across the long way this way is all that information, right? And this goes out. Goes out to all these.
Then I told him you could do anything.
Right. Yeah, I can do it.
Is there an issue of receiving organs from someone of the opposite sex?
Not really. No. But
do you mean medically or?
I don't know why that would be important. But. What happens though? Here's the really critical question. Here's the really critical question. So all this information gets simultaneously sent out to every transplant center in the country, which is about somewhere between, I don't know, 75 and 100, a lot of them, right? And then everyone gets to say, I want it or I don't want it at the same time, right? This is like 100 places, and the last column, if you look at the last column to the right, that's the responses of the various places. This was a bad heart. So what are they all saying? No, right? I think they're all saying no on that one. Right? It was like, I think the time from removal was like over like 6 hours, which is a lot. And so they said, so everybody then writes yes or no. Then what happens? So let's say it's not a bad heart. Let's say it's a good heart that everybody wants. So everyone's going to write yes. So then there's a hierarchy of precedence, not known to anyone who's putting their name on the list. We'll say, well, proximity means something, so the zone A's get precedence over B, C, D. So So that's the first thing. In other words, they're closer in location. In other words, like it's more effective because the heart will get to them sooner.
So how much space between like zone A and B versus like
miles? Yeah. I don't know. I don't know it offhand, but I'm saying like they have cutoffs that are based on, you know, scientific information where we should say up till here is reasonable. It's an hour away, 2 hours away. And the next zone is more hours away.
As soon as it's all flown by helicopter.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but
plane
actually.
So then after that, they then try to match up the most, and what's in there is the severity of the illness of the recipient, right? How sick they are, how much time they have left, until they finally pick one. Now, here's the Shiloh. When does the heart mamish come out of the body? Because at the time you put your name on the list, so from the time that you're putting your name on the list, you have no idea if you're going to be the one chosen. You have no idea. So from that side, this is really a nekuda lekula, right? Where it's random. I'm not really facilitating anything. I'm putting my name on the list, and so are 59 other people or 79 other people. Everyone's putting their name on the list. None of us is really going to be the one necessarily who can say bevada'ut. I'm causing the surgeon to take the heart out, right? That's one way of looking at it. You hear what I'm saying? You got to think about this.
You're saying if you're the only one in the zone whose hospital says yes, then you would be.
You don't even know the zone. Meaning, like, you're kind of like, well, that might be part of the strategy, but you're like saying, this is kind of what I would want, and hope I get it, right? I hope I get it. But you're not like, the way Rabbi Tendler presented it is, you're putting your name on the list, and it's because of you the surgeon's taking it out. No, not true. However, there's one flaw to this logic. Anyone think of it? Ultimately, what's going to happen, and here's where it becomes a big shayla, a lachuk shayla, which we'll have to talk about another day. But it's based on sugyas that are very interesting. But
they make sure they have it. They make sure they have
a recipient. Once he's picked,
they make sure they have a recipient before they take it out.
Right. So he could back out and prolong the life of that person. Is he chayv to do that? That becomes the shayla. You hear what's going on? Putting himself on the list, mutter lagamrei, because it's random. There's no relation. Right. So that's why, that's what it's going to come down to. You have to really know Sanhedrin really well to answer the shayla. It's an incredible thing. If I'm now randomly selected, just totally randomly, and I'm the guy, and then now I'm in this position where things are happening, right? They're going to take that heart out now, but if I would say, I don't want to do it anymore suddenly, they're going to have to do the whole thing over again and pick someone else. Am I really chayv to do that? So question number one is yes or no. And question number two is, why would Rav Shlomo Zalman say in Eretz Yisrael, no, you are, it's usher, and in the United States it's mutter? So I'd like to leave you with a cliffhanger. We're going to have shots, but think about it a little.
In Eretz
Yisrael,
it's
usher. Huh? In Eretz Yisrael. So Shlomo Zalman said it, yes. And it's based on, I'll give you a little hint, it's based on a very famous Mishnah LeMelech. Anyone know the sugya of Nisei Iver, the way that works? Yeah, I'll tell you that angle on it, since come, we're going to run out of time for that.
Is there any issue at all with donating like kidneys and stuff like that?
It's a big mitzvah.
Yeah? Like
live donation of a kidney? We did it.
Yeah, but
right, it's not a chiyuv, but it's a big mitzvah. The mitzvah, certainly not a chiyuv, and no one should ever feel that they need to do it. That's how I feel about it. No one should be feeling guilty about not doing their kidney. It's not a pasha by any means. It's a tremendous mitzvah. You got to give credit to the people that do it. I'm not running around promoting that people should do it. Because I still think it's not a davar pasha in terms of sakana, potential sakana. Not a davar pasha. But it's safe enough that it's a big mitzvah. It's not a chassid shote. Right? You're not like crazy if you're doing it. Alright, anyway, sorry for...
Are these the recipients or the donors?
The donor is the hole across, and going down are the recipients.
Yeah, no.